Do you love and hate the hospitality industry? Then you are in the right spot. Join your hosts, Kyle and Sarah, Sean Walsheth, and Jensen Cummings as they talk shop and give real insights into the latest restaurant news and most pressing issues facing hospitality professionals today. Welcome in to the Restaurant Idea Factory.
Welcome in to Restaurant Idea Factory Original. Barbecue's Life and Original. The battle of the hats, man. Swap it out, Kyle. There we go. This is our intro today. It's just Kyle
putting original.
Now it's real. Okay, now we can start the show.
is that an un on the other? Is that on the side of the hat?
What?
Does it say un
on the back?
Un?
Un right there, yeah. Is that an un?
Yeah, that's cute.
UN? You like that?
I like what we did there.
You like that? Yeah.
This is going to be a good show. I can feel it already. All right, what are we getting into today? We're getting into Riff 24. 24 shows in, guys. We're going to be talking about leading food poisoning cause. We got a gunman in a restaurant and Uber Eats robots. More robots. We've got a bunch of stuff to cover today. We're going to be talking about Dave's Hot Chicken versus Nashville Legends. Is food delivery and virtual kitchen market dwindling? We got a little David versus Goliath. Driving check average and equipment going out on a Friday night. That gives me PTSD, no doubt. It always goes out on Friday night at 7:30. The equipment does.
Oh, yeah.
Sean, you're leaving this weekend, right? For the village, man.
Leaving to the village.
This is big time. What is getting ready to move the content game to Bulgaria look like?
Content stacking is what it looks like. I've become a professional content stacker.
Have you just been going nuts the last like couple weeks to try and have?
I can't even record any more interviews because I'm infringing upon the next year's calendar.
I don't even remember when I did that interview with you like 4 months ago.
I did that a long time ago with you. It's a good thing it's evergreen content we're doing.
Yeah, you got to be sure people aren't like, yeah, we got an event this weekend. Yeah,
my book came out like a year ago, bro.
That is the challenge, right? To like manage the timeline of when you do an interview and when you put it out. You got to like have that runway. You also didn't want to like, you create a relationship with somebody and then you leave them hanging and be like, yeah, I'll get you on the podcast. And they're like 2 months from now, like, you're full of shit, man. You said to get me on the podcast. Like, well,
womp womp.
We got a bunch recorded. Then you're like, all right, well, let's do two a week. I did that for a while. And then you can't sustain it. So you're like, okay, I got to go back to once a week. It's a first world problems, people, but that is the game.
Content.
The game of a content creator, or a podcaster. 100%. All right, let's get into this. What do we got first, guys? We're talking about delivery diaries, the whole ecosystem of the delivery world. This headline here, Robert Earl's virtual restaurants grow as others fall by the wayside. Earl's Virtual Dining Concepts, VDC, meanwhile, provides virtual restaurants, menus, and brands, often with celebrity partnerships, to existing restaurants. It is part of Uber's new certified virtual restaurant program. Virtual Dining Concepts is in more than 3,015 kitchens with about 4,525 brand locations, as some restaurants offer more than one of the menus. All right, we've talked about VDC before. Mr. Beast Burger is one of their concepts. We've talked about that a little bit. So this was talking about some of their brands doing really well amidst some maybe downturn within what's happening with virtual brands. So let's jump into this. What do we think about their brands potentially, but what do we think about our virtual kitchens waning a little bit right now, guys?
I've never ordered from one. Have you guys ever ordered from one knowingly? Yeah.
I ordered from Mr. Beast.
How many times?
Once for my show.
There you go.
Mm.
That's my argument.
And for you, Sean, are you going to so many, trying so many places, it's hard to get back to one, or would you not order it again? What was the experience?
No, Mr. Beast was actually really good. I was very impressed with the burger, the fries, the packaging, all of it. That was very impressed. Mr. Beast is actually opening up in Bulgaria. Their virtual dining concept is opening up in Bulgaria. And I'm like, I'm definitely ordering if I can. If it's open, I'm going to definitely get some content from Mr. Beast in Bulgaria. If it's open there, I'm guessing it'll probably be next year, next summer trip. But
2024, yeah. Mr. Beast Burger in Bulgaria for the wall chef.
Wait, you know what turned me off from them is like there's a basically like a convenience store that's not attached to a gas station or anything, but it looks like it should be. And they had a sign outside with like 9 different virtual concepts on it. And yeah. I'm like, this, that's just not a good look.
Yeah. You
know, like basically,
do you happen to know what kitchen, what restaurant that Mr. Beast Burger is coming from?
No.
See, I always wonder about that. I wonder about the consistency of that. I wonder about the integrity of that when you might have a taco joint in San Diego. You might have a pizza place in LA. You might have you might have a pho place in Brooklyn that are then producing Mr. Beast Burger or any of the Robert Earl's virtual dining concept brands. What does that mean for the integrity of that product? And what does that also mean for the restaurant itself? You created a restaurant and you're trying to build this brand and this other brand comes in and maybe does help you maximize your time that your output is better. But all of a sudden that other brand is better for your bottom line than your own brand. Is that a brand confusion internally within the team? Like, I just don't know how that works for a restaurant that is layering on top of their own restaurant. You guys have thoughts on that?
I think the second it starts to slip below, people are just going to be like, fuck it. Just get rid of it. You know, some cook could be dragging on the chicken tenders for like whatever. One like, who's that? Who has a chicken tender? DJ Khaled or one of these guys? The other one, like a chicken tender, like, or Tigga. And they're like, they're dragging on the fries, but then they got like an in-house customer waiting for something. They're going to be like, fuck this, turn it off. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah, I could see that. What happens if it goes the other way? What if the Mr. Beast Burger or any virtual concept on top of theirs is better, more consistent? The numbers start to access the other way. Do you see somebody saying, fuck it, turn off, lock the doors. We're only doing the virtual concept.
Yeah, I do. I do for sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I think also the ego will take place. Like, I didn't open up this place to be a goddamn Mr. Beast factory, yada, 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 that whole, you know, I could definitely see that happening too.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I think that they don't really, it's going to be tough to have any real staying power. I think they're good one-offs, but it'd be interesting to see. Mr. Beast might be the only one. I mean, anything that could scale to that size is impressive.
Yeah, he could be the exception because he's got such brand power and he's pretty embedded in this space of F&B at this point. Do you think, put yourself in the operator's mindset, do you think an operator that adds a virtual concept on top of what they're doing, be it a next bite concept, be a virtual dining concepts into their space, do you think they're doing it because they're trying to be innovative and creative and have more revenue streams? Or do you think it's more out of desperation that they're not busy enough, they're not maximized, they're scrambling to try to figure out a way to keep their business afloat, rents are raising, all of those type of things? What's the mentality of somebody going into launching a virtual concept on top of their own restaurant?
To me, it reeks of desperation. Right? Are any of them crushing it? I could just not know. I don't know any of them that are crushing it other than Mr. Beast.
The brands themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I continue to believe in friendly ghost kitchens, not dark ghost kitchens. I think that's probably one of the problems with the virtual concepts is there has to be a relationship, you know, speaking to Kyle on the landlord side, you know, creating some sort of space where we know that there's restaurants there. You know, food halls aren't the answer, I don't think, but there are cool experiential food halls. But how do you create a takeout window space with, you know, a couple seats here and there so that people in the village, you have to know that there's food there. I think the problem with dark kitchens and ghost kitchens is that we don't know, like you said, where this food is coming from. And we don't have a connection to the craftsmen, to the people that are making the food. If robots are making the food, it's completely different. But humans are making the food. You know, we have humans. Steven is at our ghost kitchens. You know, we have human in there that is, we've slow cooked this barbecue, we've put it into a ghost kitchen. Do we believe in that? Like, what I do know is that by being in ghost kitchens for the last 2 years, it's proven that our concept will travel for non-traditional locations. If I didn't open up a ghost kitchen, I would not know that I could operate in 200 square feet. I know that now. Yes, we can operate in 200 square feet. But what does that look like as a more profitable and sustainable business model? I don't think it's part of, you know, the existing infrastructure that we had, which is why we're looking at other partners to partner with, which is why we're looking at other stadium locations, other
airports, breweries,
yeah. breweries, all of that. But to your question, like getting in the mindset of an operator, part of it is desperation and part of it is innovation, I think, you know, like we're
they go hand in hand sometimes.
They go hand in hand, you know. We went from a full breakfast restaurant and a lunch restaurant and added a dinner and a sports bar to now we're just doing barbecue and we're 12 to 8, but then we're looking at it. We have people in early. So we're like, well, what if we open back up for breakfast? All these people that love our restaurant, love our brand, keep asking for breakfast. Well, you know, it's that slippery slope. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. And once you start opening for breakfast and making eggs and bringing in breakfast burritos, now all of a sudden those lunch orders for all the barbecue that we've spent all this time branding, that goes to the wayside. So it's, you know, there's no easy answer. Absolutely no easy answer to this.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going anywhere. Convenience is going nowhere. People want food quick and easy, and they want great food, you know, not just fast food. They want craft food. You know, what Wow Bao was doing, we had Jeff Alexander, that Wow Bao vending machine was phenomenal.
Insane.
We had some cheeseburger dumplings in the vending machine at the National Restaurant Association show. It was unbelievable what they're doing.
The thing that they're all missing is the brand recognition. Because, like, it's like if you have to get on the platform, you have to get on, like, any one of those platforms, you are still going to be outranked by – let's just say McDonald's or whatever the other one,
Cheesecake
right?
Factory, Chipotle.
Who's going to scroll down to the 10th ranked burger?
Nobody.
Yeah. If you go to the second page of Google, entries, massive.
Second page of Google? No.
Yeah. No. Big old paywall. And there's not really, you can't earn organic reach there, right? You're not proving your authority to Google. You're not proving your authority to Uber Eats or DoorDash. That is for sure a paywall.
Content
scenario. Whoever pays is going to get that visibility. So then let's zoom out of the other half of what this specific article and others have been talking about, that there's potentially a dwindling, a downturn. For me, it's really kind of like a recoil of delivery market as a whole, right? So we had peak, potentially artificial peaks with COVID and the pandemic. And now we're seeing kind of a little bit of a rebalance in like what is the actual delivery market. The costs are so much higher, and I think people now are being a little bit more thoughtful. You're seeing a lot more restaurants that are really pushing people to carry out, obviously for the fees and all that, but I think it's not such a burden for them to do anymore because I think the market is going, I don't want to pay these fees anymore, and now I'm much more willing to leave my house and go pick up. So what do you guys think is happening within the delivery market as a whole as it starts to stabilize?
Look, I think those, I just read an article. I think it was in Canada though. And we maybe even said it here, but like white table, quote unquote, white table dining is coming back because people crave, they still want to go out. They want to go out. They want to connect. There's just got to be a balance between the two. I don't think that it's going to be, I don't think we went all the way the one way, right? Which is never probably going to stick around. So it's going to
just, we knew there was going to be an overcorrection back, right?
Yeah.
I mean, technology isn't going anywhere and it's only getting better. I took my daughter to Disneyland for her 4th birthday and I was fascinated with how many people were still waiting in line when they have order ahead on the Disney app.
Yeah.
And literally we ordered ahead. It wasn't a good burger, you know, no knock on Disney, but Galaxy Burger, we can step it up, Disney. Like, go, the order Disney. Ahead feature allowed my son and I to ride the Starship ride. So a half hour, I waited in line for a half hour. But while I was waiting in line, instead of waiting in line for the burger to eat the burger, I was waiting in line for a ride that was one of the highlights of my son's day. And when we went after the ride, we went and picked up the burger and the fries and we sat down, we ate, and we saved ourselves, you know, 45 minutes of waiting in a burger line. So you know, for delivery, for takeout, for pickup, like people hate lines. I hate lines. I literally will do anything. I'm the kind of person that goes to a stadium 4 hours before it starts because I don't want to go in with everybody else.
Yeah.
People are like, it's like a lemmings thing though. People are such natural line formers. They see a line form and they're like, well, I think I'm going into that place. I remember going to concerts all the time where I'd walk to the very front of the line and be like, hey, I have a ticket already. Do I need to wait in that line? They're like, no, that line's for people who haven't bought tickets yet. And I go, oh, so if you already have a ticket, you don't have to wait in that line. You see like 30 people walk out of that line because they never asked the question. Yeah, they weren't willing to look stupid and go, yeah, you have to wait in the back of the line, idiot. But you know, I like don't want to wait that line.
Let me ask you a question. Do you like going inside to the gas station to pay for your gas?
Hell no. I can't remember.
I'll go to another gas station.
Oh, yeah. I will go. Yes. I'll get in my car, leave there and go to another gas station.
100%.
Then go inside and pay.
Like, get serious. You want me to get out of my car, go like, can you put $45 on and then I'll come back when it's only $37? Like, no.
So then you lowball it. You're like, all right, just put 20 in there. Whatever. I know it's going to be like 32, not but I don't want to be wrong. And it's 26. And I got to fucking walk back in there.
Aside from the restaurant food aspect, just in terms of everything being like getting used to that, like ordering and stuff, I go to the office in the city twice a week, 100% of the time, order, go pick it up. So I don't have to wait. Yeah. But I used to hate going to the city because the apps to buy the tickets and the app for the train schedule were two different apps. It was such a fucking like, oh, you guys can't get this together.
Oh, yeah.
But now they combined it. And not only that, it has on there if the train is running late, where the train is. And it could like store, it's got a lot more functionality. Overall, my entire experience of going to the office has been the joy of it has been increased by like 40% simply by the fact that I don't have to leave my office to go wait online for 25 minutes, go eat, or then like to do the whole bullshit with the different credit cards and different apps and all that stuff just to commute. It's, I think all that stuff is going to make a big impact on everything, every aspect of our life, because you're not going to be used to it in one area and then just be like, fuck it, in the other area.
The Disney app has estimated wait times on the map. I just look and go, where do you want to go? And it's literally, okay, it's a 2-hour wait. And for, you know, Toontown, we're not going to Toontown.
Toontown.
It's not happening. Thanks, but no thanks. How about a 25-minute wait?
You got to pay like $1,000 more for the speed pass.
The lightning pass?
Yeah.
We didn't do that.
No, the lightning pass is like 10 minutes faster.
My daughter got the bibbity bobbity experience. So
that's where
the money went. We're going to wait in line.
Pick and choose. Yeah.
Fuck that. All right. So I guess the answer is with delivery and virtual brands, we don't know. Still pending. We just don't know. And I think that's the right answer. I think it's changing every single day. I think there's not necessarily a downturn. There is now a new equilibrium that's being formed. I think anybody looking to get in that space will be aware of what the actual market of delivery today is, not what the potential synthetic market was during COVID. So have, you know, reality check there with what you're doing. And we'll see where it ends up. All right, let's get into let's get hyped up, guys. Let's get into a little guest experience presented by Ovation. Ovation is a 2-question survey platform for real-time feedback, better online reviews, and happier guests. As always, our guy Zach, but maybe a guest star on this episode. Let's check this out.
What's up, Riff? Zach Oates here with Ovation. I've got two very important things in my hand. One is my little boy, because he doesn't want to let me work alone today. And two is this very cool sling. This sling was hand woven in Jerusalem, and in it is a stone. This stone was taken from the exact brook that David took the stone to slay Goliath. Now, we all know David beat Goliath, but why? Well, Jeff Fenster, the founder of Everbowl, super great guy. Sean actually introduced me to him, just had him on my podcast. And I was checking out his Instagram reels, and he talked about how the superpower that we have of not being a giant company is speed and agility. That's why David won, biblical stuff aside, speed and agility, right? He had a sling, he had some stones, and he went over and he was able to slay Goliath. My question is, how do you, as a restaurant, stay agile? How do you speed things up? How do you test things? What's your philosophy to make sure that you don't become stodgy, old, and left behind? And how do you beat the big boys?
I love it.
Yeah, we'll answer your question in a second, but let's just take a moment to how awesome that video was. First of all,
amazing.
Have either of your kids ever been that chill sitting on your lap when you're trying to do something important? How did that happen?
Tell her.
I mean, was that take number six because the kid was like all over the place or what?
Son was phenomenal.
It was star of the show, stole the show right there. I don't even remember what Zach said. And then he had a prop as well. Isn't that the thing he said when he was on with us? We're kind of like that fun fact stuff that he collects some kind of rock stone from everywhere he travels to. So now here he got to get the stone and the sling on this one. So he like really leveled up. I don't think it goes in that jar. It's got its own sling. So, okay. Solid, Zach, as always, way to get us hyped up. All right. Agility and speed. So, Kyle, agility and speed, independent operators, David versus Goliath. Where does their focus need to be? Where do they have that opportunity? You talk about, we talk a lot about learning from the big guys and then making it your own. So how do you apply some of that? Get us started here.
I think the big advantage you have is your ability to respond. Right. Like, I mean, I think a lot of these bigger groups, we were just talking about with our interns in the office. We're doing the same work that they do, but we can get to them quicker. We don't have these layers of, hey, just check if there's an existing relationship or can we run this out to the team in Arizona? When can they get back to us? Where are we don't have to have all this communication. We do everything. There's a five of us. We can do it. So I think in the restaurant business, it's the same thing. If you're a smaller, more agile group, you have a better chance to, or you have the strategic advantage of being able to just bust out your phone and respond right away. Whereas some of these other groups, probably not the case. You know, if something happens like that, they're probably like, hey, did you see this? Should we run this by Steve? And can we make sure this is okay to say? Like, that's, people aren't going to want to wait a day for that type of stuff. I think quicker you can get to those folks with whatever their concern is, the better you're going to be.
So we talked about this, though. If you have that superpower in your pocket, if you have that superpower and the ability to have the speed, agility with, you know, respond and react in real time, why aren't more restaurateurs doing that? I know all three of us have talked to so many, like, I don't have time for that. Like, they're so focused on butts and seats and all those things that they're not responding in that way. What's the breakthrough that they're missing, or what's the fear that they're holding on to not being willing to respond?
Do your managers have, they can just respond wherever they want, or does it all go right to you?
No, I don't do it anymore. So they respond, my manager on duty, that's why we use Ovation. They respond immediately. I mean, whoever is the manager on duty is responsible for the Ovation app. And anytime somebody texts a question, they get an immediate response or immediate resolution to their question.
Mm.
Is it just a question of tech then? And not enough restaurants have bought in the idea of having that text platform, that direct interaction. Because we talk about with reviews, and we'll talk about it again today with Avi, with reviews and not being willing to respond. To me, it came down to this thing of there was almost this power dynamic in the relationship with restaurants and with guests. And I think there was this like, okay, well, you know, they're coming to us. Like, we're the place to be. So the value that we have, our obligation in the restaurant relationship is to create that great experience. But beyond that, there is no expectation. So we don't need to respond to them on social media because we have 10,000 followers and they have 212. And so there was a lot of that there was ego tied to it, that what's important for me to do and the value of the relationship is you show up and I give you great food, beverage, and hospitality. Well, we've recognized that there needs to be a much broader relationship. So you think we're potentially still stuck in some of that paradigm?
I don't know. Everything comes down to leadership from the top, and depending on the size of the group and depending on what priorities are. The problem that I see is that most restaurant owners don't prioritize the internet. They prioritize in real life, and in real life happens and real feedback happens, and they're great at responding and dealing with problems and dealing with compliments. But when it comes to all of these different platforms that people can anonymously respond or respond with a video or respond on Twitter, like, there's so many different places for a restaurant owner to know this is the pulse of your business. This is the pulse. This is the heartbeat. And if you don't prioritize it and you don't ask for help and you don't reach out to companies like Ovation or Marquee, then yeah, it can be like, well, I'll just ignore it. If I ignore it, then maybe it doesn't affect my business. But Facebook matters, Instagram matters, TikTok matters. Like, oh, this is where all the people, like, go to the most downloaded apps. That's where people are. Like, there's no secrets here. I'm not breaking any groundbreaking news here. This is what it is. This is where people are. And if you don't prioritize Google and Yelp, and you can hate Yelp, you can hate Google, you can hate Apple Maps, hate it all you want. That's the tools that people use to get either to your restaurant or to the next restaurant.
That's where the eyeballs and earballs are. There's no doubt about it.
That's a mistake that people make, is they want to go with what's comfortable and what they like.
Of course.
Like, I like to use this system of where I get to meet at, you know, with the whole pandemic. I like to have people come to my restaurant. I don't like to do delivery. Well, it doesn't fucking matter what you like, dude. You got to do what the people want.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is everyone's like, you know, I don't use an online ordering system because I have these Excel sheets that I print out every week and the guys love it. Fuck, they don't have to like it, dude. You got to do what's most important, especially with the groups that I talk to that are trying to grow. They're not going to be able to grow anything without any technology, you know, without any kind of speed. It just makes it so much easier. You're going to try to hand your little Excel sheet ordering system off to your 50 units. Not going to work.
All right, Zach, the answer is speed and agility for the little guy comes down to the supercomputer in your pocket. And totally. The ability to, in real time, be able to react, respond, and build those relationships. I think that's pretty clear. All right. Speaking of supercomputers, let's talk a little bit of robotic revelation. This is now a weekly segment. There's just no way around it. There's so much happening within this space. This was from our guy Joe at Restaurant Business Online. Uber Eats to expand use of delivery robots. So we're staying in that delivery space with the robots. A couple things from his article. Up to 2,000 more Rovers made by Serve Robotics are coming to new markets, including San Jose, Dallas, and Vancouver. The four-wheeled Rovers travel on sidewalks and have level 4 autonomy, meaning they can operate for extended periods without human intervention. Currently, more than 200 LA restaurants are offering the option. So now we have to learn about autonomy level, guys. I had no idea what the hell that was. But apparently there's different levels of the robot's ability to be self-reliant, I guess was the simplest way I could think of it. So they're expanding into new markets, into new numbers. We had Coco on the show as well, that's also delivering around LA. You basically place that order. You have the option. So it looked like that some of the restaurants you could get pickup, or you could get an Uber Eats or a DoorDash order, or you could select that specific thing, because I think there's still, you know, a little bit of unknown or lack of trust in some of those. And then they send you a code to be able to open that robot when it gets to you. So what do we think about the delivery robots?
It doesn't make sense for me. Like, not at this point. It's just too early. It's like the way I feel about Google Glass, and I don't know about Apple Glass that obviously came out as well. But like, I think we're just too early. I mean, San Diego is huge. Like, it's a joke. Like, everyone drives in a car because there's nothing, there's no like walkability score. I don't know. Kyle, can you look up San Diego's walkability? Probably zero. The fucking worst in the United States. There is no walkability.
LA can't be better, right?
You're like, I mean, what is this robot going to be, a Dodge Ram? Like, how is this robot going to get from our restaurant to, you know, the neighboring villages that want barbecue? Like, it's certainly not going to be rolling down Troy Street. I'll give you a video of Troy Street. You're going to need an off-road robot. You're going to need a four-wheel drive robot to navigate that.
Forget about that. How long before somebody just kicks one over?
Or Jackson.
There's some videos of those getting burglarized, people riding on top of them. I've seen a couple of those.
I don't think we're there yet. I don't see that as the best use for delivery.
I think it will work like in just smaller, not even like communities, but like college campuses, maybe.
In Little Italy, like little micro places, but still.
Yeah, I think about the radius of it. How far?
Like, somebody's going to charge. Like, aren't they going to charge for that? If you live close enough to walk down to the local restaurant or bar to pick that up, like, why are you going to pay an extra $5, $7 when you can just like, isn't that the whole point? You're telling me Uber Eats or DoorDash or whoever, or Grubhub, they're all going to just go, no, we're not going to charge anything extra.
Come on. You mentioned convenience is king. Somebody's like, I don't got to walk three blocks. That might be enticing enough for some people for the $7, which for sure as well. It feels like, what is the max? Yeah. Three blocks, four blocks, five blocks? At what point is that a diminishing return of the efficiency of that thing to be able to make it to you? To Sean's point too, like, are you not going to walk the three blocks, which tons of people, there's a big enough market of people that won't. But also, what's the density need to be? Like, how many places can you put them? San Jose, right? You know, that's where in San Jose, and how far is that thing going to travel? And how many pedestrians and dogs, well, not only and that, skateboarders but like, is it going to run over?
You know, what's the slope? What's the degree? Like, how far can they go up and down sidewalks? Does it need to be ADA? Like Americans with disabilities? Like, this is robots with disabilities? Like, we have to have the robots being able to go up and down slopes? Like, I don't know if you've seen sidewalks in San Diego. They're terrible. Sidewalks, potholes, it's a joke.
I've seen the potholes in San Diego surrounded by some sidewalk.
Yeah, sidewalks are a joke.
It's kind of the other way around.
San Diego, we need to step it up.
I wonder about that too. It said specifically sidewalks. Then there was level four autonomy. I'm like, so is there a level at which they can actually be on the street? Are they going into bike lanes? Because that changes that too.
The robot that we have, the Kenan Robotics, we have a robot in our restaurant and it's programmed to go in our restaurant, but every table is also programmed. So if there's a table in the way, like we had on Mother's Day, we put a table, an additional table, because of all the delivery orders that wasn't programmed to where the robot goes. And the robot started crying, like, you know, fake crying, but it was hilarious. But like, in a real world situation, you can't program where people are, where people move a trash can, or what's happening in an outdoor environment.
It's hard enough for humans to do that. The amount of people that don't know.
How do you walk in New York?
But don't know.
Like a salmon swimming upstream?
Dude, you can. There's not a, this whole time you've been talking about it, I've been trying to think of what neighbor this would work. New York. I'm about to post a video. My partner and I, we did a video during COVID time walking around right down the middle of Madison Avenue, and there was nobody there. Then we just did a random like Thursday, and the city's packed. You're not gonna be able to run a freaking robot down the street. It's not even gonna. You can barely walk.
Yeah. 45 minutes to get a block and a half there for that robot.
Yeah, nah, not gonna work.
All right. Too early is the call here. Move on. Sleep at Nights, presented by Davo. Davo automates sales tax payments and filing so restaurateurs can spend time on what actually makes them money. Let's see what we're talking about this week.
Equipment maintenance is just challenging in a restaurant. This stuff is built to last until it doesn't. And it's always on a Friday night. Consult a professional. Best advice I ever got, don't buy a used ice machine. When you're designing your kitchen, when you're buying equipment, ask them stuff like this. What equipment fits? Don't let them just sell you what they have on the floor. What's going to work best for me? What should I do to be proactive in maintaining my equipment? I had the equipment guy teach me how to change a thermocoupling on a stove. Invest in a small little handheld vacuum. Vacuum out all your compressors once a month. Locate your refrigerator compressors remotely. First hot day of the year, all your refrigeration is going to stop working. You should have a kitchen repair fund. You have to be prepared for it. Nothing's foolproof.
All this is giving me such anxiety of all those moments of having to all of a sudden become a professional at kitchen repair. I mean, I was a fucking ninja at the pilot light. I could light a pilot light on any broken piece of shit oven ever. Thermal coupling? Oh, man. Condensers? That's the worst.
No matter whatever happens with the condensers, it's always like, got to replace it. Whatever happens with the refrigerator, it's like, you got to replace the condenser.
Have to replace it. Yeah, it's why he said use ice machine. I never ever bought and never let anybody buy used refrigeration at all. You know, anything that's job is to cool down, it's just too damn important. You can heat things up in a lot of different ways. Don't get them used. And of course they break also not only a Friday night, 2 days after the warranty's up. They got that shit locked where it breaks exactly when it's supposed to break for you to have to deal with that. And now, as we're talking about the robotics and things, I'm thinking about that. Well, how are you budgeting for that? How are you planning for that? where and how is the infrastructure of a kitchen shifting because Flippy 2 is going to be making fries or chips for you? The Keenan robot, how are you reorganizing the kitchen so that that robot has more efficiency to be able to get into its back of house spaces that it needs to be a part of? Like, how does that change the equipment model for what you're doing? So, and the budget piece, God, like preventative maintenance is the number one thing within your kitchen operations that I highly suggest. Like, stay on top of it. Oh, man. Spend $350, $500 a month so you don't spend $12,000 on that one Friday night, lose a service because you weren't paying attention to your equipment because you got so much other shit to do.
Everything here, like when the weather changes, when it starts to get real hot, everybody's compressors blow because they've been able to skate by on the cool air for like the winter. Like they've been, didn't need that much energy. The second that like first day is like 85 degrees and it's humid in the kitchen, boom, compressors just start pop, 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 pop all over the place.
David mentioned that, but he told a whole story about when that would happen and, you know, like wearing headlamp fans and stuff to like keep going in the kitchen and shit like that. I was telling stories about a place where when it got that hot, the breakers would trigger and it would turn the lights off in the kitchen. And we literally had headlamps with lights on them and we'd keep cooking because the lights in the dining room would still be going. So we're still serving guests. And there was two fans that were on the line. They had to be taken, put in the compressor room. It's just like, that's the kind of stuff the rest of people are dealing with all the time. It's
the fans on the compressors is such such a band-aid on a gunshot wound. Just like, you know, it's on its way out.
We're back there with compressors and stuff with the CO2 tank blowing them out, you know, and there's just cobwebs and dust shooting everywhere. It's, man,
awful.
This can't be the way that you're supposed to operate and manage this equipment.
Definitely not.
God. Have you guys had issues with smokers? Because you have the gas assist. No,
thankfully. Oof. Thankfully, we have Old Hickory pits. That's why we partner with Old Hickory, because the pits are so dependable. They work all the time. And the only time that they've ever gone down, they have Grainger parts. So we just literally can go to a local Grainger and just replace a part. And that has happened less than a handful of times in over 15 years.
That part's key.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, having a BMW back in the day or now a Tesla where you can't get the parts. There's no access to it. So when you think about that with these robotics companies, how do you service these? You know, like there has to be a way that you can run down to the Ace Hardware and pick up a couple parts to be able to keep that thing going, especially if it's operationally necessary for the business. Because how many techs are going to be out there coming on a Friday at 7 o'clock to service your robot?
Yeah. Or they're like, just go to Home Depot and get this, that, and the other thing. And you're like, what? I don't know what the hell I'm getting here. Like,
there's going to be a whole bunch of creators on YouTube being like, here's how to DIY fix your robots.
Yeah.
Okay. As always, David, you give us a lot of PTSD when we talk to you, but seriously, that's important.
I'm breaking onto a sweat over here.
This is the stuff that makes the spidey senses tingle that we need to be paying attention to.
What about you when you go in after you close the night before and like the walk-in is down? You don't know how long it's been down?
I don't know how long. You go and you're temping a bunch of stuff and you're like, oh God, it's 42 degrees, but has it been 42 degrees for 6 hours or the last 20 minutes? Yeah, Dean LeBay, our guy over here on LinkedIn, says staying on top of what you warranty and how to extend ice machine filtering, adding 2 extra years. Yeah, man. Hey, I don't know how they got so good at making sure that warranty runs out 2 days before breaks.
Potato. What's with Dean's potato? I meant to ask him that when we saw him. You know,
he's the potato guy. It's just his love language emoji.
Clearly. It's four over here.
At least it's not the eggplant. Then it'd just get awkward and we'd have to be deleting his comments, you know?
Dean is the fucking man.
Yeah, Dean's awesome. All right. What do we got next? All right, emphasizing teams. We got several things to get into here. The first thing in emphasizing teams, this was a troubling video. So trigger warning for people. We had a gunman in a restaurant, New York City shooting. Gunman opens fire in restaurant. Patrons duck, run for cover. Incident took place Saturday, January 3rd at Bushaki Restaurant in Queens. Gunman is still at large. Police have not released the details of the investigation. Let's watch this short video here.
Jeez. Oh God. What the?
Now you can see it's clearly going specifically after this guy. This guy was shot in the buttocks once, apparently recovered, but doesn't even look like there was a robbery. Yeah, this is scary as hell, man. Dude. Like somebody running into your restaurant, shooting out the place, clearly chasing after an employee there. All right. So the first two things that come to mind is ex-employee.
Yeah.
Right.
They're money.
Potentially that they're owed money, something, right? Then there's all the personal stuff. They potentially know this person personally, or I mean, a completely disgruntled guest. We've seen a lot of people getting out of control, irate with hospitality staff, unnecessarily so, for sure. This just brought up safety. Like, what are we doing to make sure that people in the restaurant are safe? What kind of precautions are we doing? You know, are we training people on active shooter? That's something that for a lot of our consulting clients on the restaurant side, we've added into their training and manuals. It's active shooter. And the unfortunate reason that we added that is because we started getting access and learning how those were happening in our kids' schools. We're like, well, if the kids are having to learn this, what about other businesses? So that's pretty serious. What are you guys hearing about? Are you guys doing anything with?
Well, what are you telling them? Don't leave us hanging. If you have clients that you're advising, active shooter, teach us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 2-hour training. So the short and sweet of it is to be able to have safe spaces was like the number one thing. So it's almost like a fire drill. What's the exit strategy? How are you getting out of that space? How are you locking yourself down in spaces? What does that look like? Is there key code access to certain areas versus unfettered access? Those are some of like the big ticket items to know what to do. How are you communicating to people, letting people know we're going to exit out through the back, we're going to exit through the side exit, anything like that were some of the high level things. But it's a pretty intensive training that is incredibly uncomfortable to have and go through that. I mean, we talk about the awkwardness of role playing, you know, a guest server interaction where you're doing training. Wow. Imagine, you know, somebody having to pretend they're the gunman in an active shooter situation to train staff. Like, that's the reality of what some people are having to go through. Another thing we should probably check with our guy, Jason Berkowitz, see what what they're doing, because their stuff is a lot more dynamic and a lot more interesting, a lot more now than probably some of what we're doing. Because again, this was modeled slightly after what's happening in schools as far as active trainer stuff. And then there's also a couple resources for companies that are doing different kind of locks and different kind of risk mitigation within securing a facility. So
some of the first restaurants that the second restaurant I ever worked in, there was a shotgun in the office.
Yee.
Yeah, this was like,
that is not a part of this training.
I was literally, he was thinking about that back then. But yeah, that's scary, man. I mean, it could happen anywhere. I mean, New York, I mean, it's such a big place. Such a big place. It's like, I don't, did they ever find that guy? Probably not.
No, they're still at large, and they hadn't released any details as of I think yesterday. So,
and they never will. And they never will. That's just, it's scary part of what's going on.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, our hope is that everyone at that place is okay. It sounded like the employee that was shot was fully recovering. It you know, brings up other questions of like how is that person protected in that moment? But now what happens? Do they have short-term and long-term disability? Like, what has happened with that person? Are you coming back to work after something like that? So it brings up a lot of long tail discussion around what it means to kind of protect your people and support them. So, and this kind of fed into that a little bit. This was another one is looking at Restaurant Business Online for Peter Romero. When disaster hits, restaurant families have a new place to turn. This outlined a really bad tornado scenario where a family's business and whole livelihood was kind of decimated. And there's a program. This industry is helping its own through a reinvigorated aid resource called CORE, Children of Restaurant Employees, a nonprofit organized organization dedicated to helping families in the business get through a rough financial stretch. It provides the funds needed to pay essential bills such as rent, utility charges, mortgage fees, even car loan payments. The money is a gift, not a loan, and is not taxed as income. It does not pay medical bills, but as a member of the industry who's incapacitated by an illness can apply for assistance to cover living expenses for themselves and their children. The money can also be used to cover the cost of medical equipment or pharmaceuticals. So yeah, on the back of this, I want to let people know that there are some organizations, there are some access points that you can have to be able to get some support here, and just get out your pen real quick. CORE for sure, check them out. And then a couple other organizations support industry professionals in need: The Giving Kitchen, In the Weeds Org, Southern Smoke Foundation, Modest Needs, and then Chow Culinary Hospitality Outreach and Wellness. So we need to make sure that people know that they're not alone in times of desperate need, for sure. And we've also seen a lot of Kickstarter type campaigns supporting people's recovery and things like that. The hospitality industry may not have a lot of money, but damn, it supports its people when they're down. So I don't know if you guys had anything to add. I just wanted to make sure that people knew there was a resource out there. Any other ways that you guys are seeing that people are getting some access to much needed funds, support, resources?
That was the first I heard of that.
Yeah, it was the first I had heard of it as well. So, all right. And please, in the comments, if anybody has any other organizations, any other access points, be it independent foundations, nonprofits, be it government assistance, whatever that might be, let people know. I think a lot of times we get so stuck in our four walls in the restaurants, it's hard to know that there is support mechanisms out there if you get hurt and miss work. All right.
Maybe you can put the links to those guys in the show notes.
Yep. We'll get that rolling too, for sure. And tag them up on social as well. Some good organizations out there doing some hard work, for sure, especially on the physical side. We definitely see a lot of things happening within mental health, but you get hurt, and this is part of what we're talking about here in this next piece. You're sick, potentially. You have major chronic illness or something happened to you in that respect that's pretty tough. But this came from the AP News. Sick workers tied to 40% of restaurant food poisoning outbreaks, CDC says. Let me read through some of this real quick. Food workers who showed up while sick or contagious were linked to about 40% of restaurant food poisoning outbreaks with a known cause between 2017 and 2019. Norovirus and salmonella germs that cause severe illness were the most common cause. 800 outbreaks, which encompassed 875 restaurants and reported by 25 state and local health departments. About 48 million people a year in the U.S. are sickened by foodborne illness, including 128,000 who are hospitalized, with 3,000 who die. Okay. Yeah. So this was another one, kind of a You Heard video that I did a couple days ago. And there was just this anxiety of people. They're like, well, look, I don't want to leave my team short staff. We have this, you know, tough gal mentality. We also can't afford to not be able to go into work. So there was a lot of that tied to it as well. One of the questions, though, that I had for this, and I haven't been able to see the full report kind of from the CDC, but if people are getting other people sick, how is that a foodborne illness? That's the part I was unclear on. So is it people are somehow contaminating the food that then's passed on to the people? But wasn't exactly sure of that. So how have you guys dealt with foodborne illness elements, food poisoning, personally, staff, guests? What are we thinking here?
I don't remember. Like, I don't think we were like mainly carbs. So we didn't have, I don't think we ever had a foodborne
pizza and pasta safest business if you're worried about foodborne illness.
I think so. I have heard some gnarly stories though about like how people get this stuff, like from ice machines and shit like that. But no, thankfully we never had to deal with that I recall.
What about for you guys, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely had less than a handful of cases where people said that they got sick, and obviously your concern is to find out and document, you know, making sure that you go through the right documentation as a management. Yeah. Understanding where and what did they eat, when did they come in, are multiple people complaining about the same chicken that was served, was it, you know, under temp? One of the things that we get the most complaints about is chicken, because the chicken looks pink because it's smoked. But yeah,
especially
smoked.
If you got on the bone, right?
Yeah. So, but other than that, I mean, it's an education issue, it's a communication issue, and it's a safety issue. You know, if you have to make sure sometimes things happen. I mean, Chipotle almost went under because of foodborne illness. That was a huge deal that, you know, they, for them, thankfully, were able to pivot and lean into technology and programs to actually find out where the problems were coming from. But yeah, it's an issue.
Yeah, they said here, only about 44% of managers told the CDC their restaurant provided paid sick leave to workers. And according to Mitzi Baum, the chief executive of Stop Foodborne Illness, a nonprofit advocacy group, said that it means that workers are forced to choose between earning money or showing up sick, or there's the social pressure not to leave fellow employees short-staffed. And that's it's a big deal. I for sure have felt that. And I mentioned this in the video where I went on almost 7 year span where I never took a sick day and was like sick as a dog, throwing up in trash cans, like between services sick. But I was like, oh, I have to show up. You know, I can't leave the team hanging. But the reality is you're stuck in that. You know, I got people on the team sick. Like there's just no way about it. So like the downstream effect, then more people are sick. And if to whatever degree this is true and actual, that the amount of people getting sick on the guest side are coming from sick workers, well then I absolutely got guests sick, right? And so that's a big problem again with the mentality and the approach, and sick pay for sure needs to be a part of that equation so that people don't have to decide, well, I'm not too sick to go to work. Like, listen, if you're sick, don't go to work. It's not good for you, it's not good for the business, it's not good for the guests, clearly. And this just throws up another, you know, red flag for us to be aware of, that if places, and lots of people were commenting that they got fired because they missed one day of work and it was because they're sick, or you're not allowed to call in sick. You have to come in and prove to the manager that you're sick. You hear those type of stories. Yeah. It's like, fuck,
doctor's note in the doctor's note. And
there was that one we saw from the Olive Garden, wherever that was in Florida, where manager sent that wild email to everyone, said, if your dog dies, bring it in so we can see. I'm like, come on, you guys, like,
what? That's fucking crazy.
It was pretty rough, you know. And I even have empathy for, let's say, a scheduling manager who's like, oh, you know, everyone keeps calling out sick and I'm short staffed and all these, like, I'm sure that that's a real problem for people. We can't be having people come in sick because you're short staffed. The downstream effect of that and the potential cost of that could be a lot more than being short staffed for that shift. So
yeah, I mean, right. Especially with what's happened in the last couple of years, right? Pay attention.
What happened in the last couple of years?
Short-term memory.
What happened?
I think we forgot about it already. I see a lot of places slipping back into bad sanitation habits. I'm hyper aware of that stuff now for sure.
Yeah, like 90% of those hand sanitizer machines are empty now everywhere you
go. Yeah. Tell those how
liquor companies aren't making hand sanitizer anymore.
I'm convinced half of them were just like shit bottles of tequila they just couldn't get rid of. This turned
out it's just methanol. Yeah. It was just the first runs of shitty tequila. That's pretty much all it was.
The stuff New York State was giving out in like these gallons was hard. It was so bad. I can still smell it.
Right. All right, what do we got next? A little reading reviews presented by Marquee. Marquee is a one-stop digital operations platform for no-touch digital menus and listing updates. Let's hear from Avi Gorin.
Hey, Riff team. It's 11:30 a.m. Do you know where your reviews are? This week, I want to talk about how to respond when a reviewer mentions your competitors in your review. We have a great 4-star review from Dave's Hot Chicken that we want to talk about today. This is from Denver. Who is this Dave, and how legit is he? Dave's Hot Chicken ain't Hattie B's, Bolton's, or Prince's, but when not in Nashville, Dave's will do you all right. Pretty good chicken slider with some nice crispy chicken. Medium was not hot at all. Hattie's would smoke this one. Crispy seasoned fries were good and crisply. Definitely a Disney-like vibe. okay, Dave & Buster's, TGIF, etc. Great drunk eats, in my honest opinion. The reviewer mentions a slew of competitors here, giving them valuable real estate. There's tons of photos. And the response is, hey, David, thanks for sharing. We'd love a second chance to earn that fifth star. Please connect with us at yada, yada, yada. This response is clearly an automated one. What do you think Dave's could have done better to make the most of this response and opportunity to react to the competitors being mentioned?
Man, you got to compete against legends of Nashville hot chicken to even be able to exist. And in Denver too. Well, all right. So Kyle,
yeah,
you mentioned it earlier, like the ability to respond. So is Dave's hot chicken missing out on opportunity here by having an auto response versus clearly what was a thoughtful and kind of descriptive and detailed, even if it was shit talking a little bit, review?
What do you have to respond to with that? Like, I don't know. That sounds, seems like an opinion piece. There's nothing to really respond to. It's like a little op-ed piece on his experience. But he wasn't complaining.
Not just about the medium not being hot enough. We've talked about that, I think. Nothing is ever hot enough.
Like, I think it's subjective.
You know, I think it's an opportunity potentially to be able to say, oh, we love Prince's, Bolton's, Hattie B's as well. And thank you for, you know, mentioning those Nashville legends, yada, yada, from there, to put themselves in the community of hot fried chicken places. Maybe potentially that could be an angle for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think they are just like, hey, yeah, I like that angle. Like, yeah, you know what? They're actually an inspiration for us. We love them. We strive to be like them every day, whatever the hell. But I think ultimately, you know, they're a different product. They're not the same product, right? That's not that's not what Dave's is all about. I think they're all about scaling growth and getting more hot chicken sandwiches in everybody's hands. And I think enough people like them. I don't think there's much to reply there. Thanks for the insight, buddy.
Yeah. I wonder if Avi's question is like, is somebody giving, let's say it's a 4-star review or hell, any review, and giving a decent amount of detail, is there a certain word count that all of a sudden, yeah, when we've been talking about what prompts the human response versus the auto-generated or the AI response, chatbot response?
That's what
I wonder if word count is part of it. Like, that occurred to me when I was listening to this. This is a long response. There's a lot going on here. All of a sudden, like, wait, you could do that. You could say, hey, if a review exceeds, you know, 70 words, 50 words, that prompts a different type of response. If somebody says, we had a good time, it was fine. Yeah, that response probably makes sense. This one, they took some time and put some effort, whether you like it or not, I guess. Sean, what do you think? How's Podursky replying to something like this?
To be honest with you, I like the AI, if that is an AI response. I mean, I thought it was simple and to the point. But, you know, there's two ways. There's three ways you can go about it. You can go about it the rising tide, which is what you talked about, is acknowledging, sure, the other brands, which we've done on plenty of reviews when people talk shit about our barbecue and say it's not as good as Coop's West Texas barbecue. That's a different type of barbecue. We love Coop. Brad does an incredible job. He's right down the street from us. It's not the same as Valley Farm Market. We're not the same as Valley Farm Market. We're not the same as Corbin's. These are all brands that literally barbecue in front of our restaurant at our barbecue festivals. We acknowledge them in reviews. So there is that way to respond. There's the Wendy's way, which you can tell everyone other brand to fuck off. Like, we aren't Disney's. Like, you can come and eat when you're sober and you can eat when you're drunk. There's multiple ways to respond to that. Or you can just keep it short and sweet and simple and move on. I mean, they gave 4 stars. Could you get 5 stars from it? Yeah. The most important thing is the timeliness of the response. How fast did that respond, you know, happen for me?
Mm-hmm. The Wendy's response is tough. Like, the response game is elite.
It's impossible. No one can compete with what Wendy's does on Twitter.
That's the best. It's
brilliant.
They are genius level.
My wife didn't believe that they were true. She thought that somebody was like, they, no, they're
absolutely incredible. I want to talk to that Wendy's Twitter account person.
Do we know who they are? Is it like not public?
Anonymous.
That's amazing.
I'm working on it, but it's still anonymous.
Yeah, they are hidden deep in the depth of creativity.
It's probably some like 27-year-old kid just super snarky nailing it.
There's all these writer strikes and things like that happening. It's like clear that Netflix needs the quality of writers that they have over at Wendy's.
Twitter.
Whatever they're churning out, it's not on that Wendy's creativity level. That's for damn sure. So, okay. So I like that. Three approaches, the rising tide, be able to have some snarky brand voice, which I think Dave's Hot Chicken potentially has the opportunity to do that, or keep it short and sweet and don't try too hard to rock the boat or, dialogue it out. So hopefully that answers the question there. Let's get into this last segment here. Let's talk a little eater etiquette. This is always just kind of the relationship between guests and staff here. This was from Rich Shank, want a higher check average, get diners to stay longer. Technomics take: diners, even if they're alone, tend to spend more the longer they stay at a restaurant. Technomics, we mentioned, is part of the suite of businesses now purchased by Informa, Nation's Restaurant News, Winside, who owns the National Restaurant Association. Show Technomics is their data arm here. So they kind of broke out some numbers here in a hypothetical. They said a single diner might spend on average $10 for takeout. Dining in, that average jumps to $12. Keep them at a table for more than 15 minutes, that average can jump to $15, a 50% increase over the takeout average. So this is interesting because we've always had this mentality of turning tables. Like, how are we able to turn those tables? But they're saying here, if you're trying to drive that check average up, you need to keep them at the table for a while. 15 minutes, though, like, who's not at a table for more than 15 minutes if they're dining in? That is a really, really quick turnaround.
That's like, so, where are those numbers coming from?
Technomics is the company that's crunching all that. That, again, was, I think they were part of Winsight, that now is a part of Informa, Nation's Restaurant News, or maybe they were already a part of that, but they're in that whole suite of businesses now that are basically trying to process whatever data points that they can. So, yeah, what is that point? I don't really know that. You know, I know for different services, we were thinking about what a different dining average is. Right away, my head went to brunch when we think about people just lingering, and brunch has a diminishing return after like 45 minutes, and the average brunch person stays for an hour and a half, and bottomless this and bottomless that. So, I don't know. How are we thinking about the amount of time somebody spends versus the amount of money that they're actually spending? How are you guys spending any time processing that, Kyle, Sean?
Do you guys have anybody doing timetables out there where you guys are?
What do you mean timetables?
Like, we've definitely seen timetables.
Yeah, we can see dropping off an hour.
Yeah, where you had brunch was the biggest one that we saw, where somebody had an hour and 15 minutes for a brunch table. I think that's starting to go away a little bit, as that was very, very pandemic.
Timetables. That's some
bullshit. That's always like, it's timetable. You could get the check and be like, it's $115. Actually, you can run this card for $75. Sorry, it's all
I was under my average.
That's all I allocated to spending here, but you charge me more. So what are we going to do? It's sad. I hate that. Besides the fact that it's blatantly not hospitable, like by definition.
I just got a potential article message from Rick Boyd, who's a restaurateur down in Texas, that came from Reno. So I think he keeps up on Reno. Anyway, there's a place there that's like beautiful tables on the window right on the water. And it's $50 just to be able to book that table. And this isn't like a guarantee for the table. You're paying $50 just to be able to sit at that table and then be able to then order from there. But you're paying $50 right on the spot for a ticket, basically, for one of those tables. So similar kind of thing. Like, are we now just selling real estate?
I think we talked about this before, that the app it's in New York. I don't know if it's in any other cities, but Dorsia, where they're charging you, like, you can't get into some restaurants, but if you're willing to say, hey, we'll spend $150 each if we come here, then you can have the table. You know, there's things like that, but I don't know. I don't think the super high-end restaurants need it. And then the low-end restaurants, how high are people really going to pay just to get in on for that convenience? But
unless that's a desperation move where they're trying to get in right now because they're outside of the restaurant, they happen to be in Times Square. Like, there's only a certain amount of real estate where selling real estate that way is going to make any sense. So yeah, I'm interested to learn more about this and hear from people if they see kind of a point where they're maximizing their check average. And then if there is a point that there's a diminishing return and what and how they're suiting the experience to be able to kind of meet that time point. But this, I don't know about these numbers, 15 minutes, like how does 15 minutes change somebody jumping from $12 to $15? What experience are they having sub 15 minutes at most restaurants? Then this has to be full service because it can't be numbers around quick service because they're ordering in one shot. They would have to be able to get another round, so to speak.
15 minutes.
Or get certain. Oh, man. You turning tables in 15 minutes, Sean? Because no. That.
we are for takeout. I mean, that's.
Yeah, of course.
That's slow food fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. Takeout versus dine-in, having a higher check average. Like, that's obvious. Yeah. That's a no-brainer. But it's that $12 to $15 average jump because you exceed 15 minutes. That. I don't know.
That's because you guys don't have a lot of like cooked to order. Like nothing's like, no. Right? I mean, do you have burgers on your menu?
No. Just added smash burgers because we have so many people asking for it. But yeah, that's.
Yeah, because even the steak is smoked and then finished, right? Yeah.
Tri-tip smoke. Everything's
tri-tip.
Fast. Yep.
Yeah. All right, everyone.
Starving.
That's speaking of time. That's all the time that we got for
lunchtime. It's lunchtime.
For this show. Once again, this was Riff 24. Good stuff here. For sure. Lots more on robots, the human experience. Definitely make sure and check out some of those resources.
Don't bring a gun to a restaurant.
No.
Please, 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 please.
TSA. People.
Let's keep restaurant people safe. They're doing, their job is hard. Don't add a gun into the mix, please. I don't know. I'm not telling you to run your business, but don't have a shotgun in the fucking office.
We never had a problem.
Never had a problem. Was there a sign on the door that says there's a shotgun in the office?
Yeah. Ownership back.
Was it an actual deterrent there? Good show from Dean. Thanks, Dean. And Dean, let us know, what's the deal with the potato? Drop that in the comments. Yeah, breaking news in the comments of Restaurant Idea Factory episode 24 with the potato in Dean's
I'm staying until he tells me. Tell us, Dean. God damn it.
We're going to observe a moment of silence and not end this show until Dean tells all. Right, that's it. Appreciate you as always. Head to Restaurant Idea Factory on all the socials. You can check out what we're up to. Always, always message us, DM us individually. Restaurant Idea Factory. Go to restaurantideafactory.com. Let us know what you want to hear us talking about. We feed off of what is most important to you day in and day out for your experience within the restaurant industry. That's it. Good show, guys. Cheers.
Later.
Subscribe to full episodes Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn.